Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Javier Carreras, who is a professor of political science at Amherst College. He's the author of Dragon in the Tropics, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela. And he serves on the editorial board of Latin American Politics and Society and America's Quarterly. He has been a consultant to the United Nations Center for Global Development and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. His latest book is U.S.-Venezuelan Relations Since the 1990s, Coping with Mid-Level Security Threats. Welcome to Background Briefing, Javier Carreras.
Thank you very much.
And you're quoted extensively in the New York Times on Monday about Venezuela President Hugo Chavez's latest trip to Cuba for more cancer surgery. And the fact that he has actually appointed a successor is really, I guess, that's news. There's been so much uncertainty and so many speculation about Chavez's mortality, if you will. And a lot of the speculation has been on there's never been any sort of succession in place, which has concerned a lot of people. But now there appears to be succession. So what do you make of it?
You're absolutely right. The reason that this is newsworthy is because Chavez has been a president who's been undergoing treatment for cancer, and his health hasn't been getting any better. But all along this time, he has refused to address the possibility of succession. And so what he has done is he interrupted treatment in Cuba. He flew back home to Venezuela and in a matter of 24 hours made the public announcement that he has finally decided on his successor. He was, of course, speaking mostly to his own party, where enormous uncertainty, and more than just uncertainty, but internal competition for the job was getting a little bit out of control. And so he went back home, in my opinion, to settle that debate and to finally tell the Chavistas that Maduro is Chavez's choice.
And Maduro is the a former bus driver union official. He's the foreign minister. He's a relatively young guy, isn't he?
He is young, and he is. He comes from a labor background, and he's not a person who comes from an elite world by any stretch of the imagination. He has done very well, but it is important to juxtapose his humble background to the kind of job that he has had under Chavez. He is Chavez's foreign minister, has been since 2006, and one of the things that occurs is, as happens with all foreign ministers, you end up surrounding yourself with foreign dignitaries who are, number one, not Venezuelan, and number two, mostly elite. So he has this problem now that in many ways he has a humble background, which is in line with what the image that the revolution wants to convey, but he has been a diplomat, the top diplomat for the country, and that has separated him a little bit from the Venezuelan ordinary citizenry.
Well, my understanding, though, is that Chavez's foreign policy is not entirely popular back home in Venezuela. His support, for example, for the Assad dictatorship in Syria, which he's helping keep alive by supplying them with oil and diesel, because they're undergoing an international boycott. That's very unpopular, I believe, with the Syrian diaspora. There's a considerable Syrian and Lebanese diaspora in Venezuela, and they've been demonstrating against Hugo Chavez's foreign policy. So will this new nominee or successor of Chavez, if indeed he has terminal cancer, which seems to be the consensus of opinion in the intelligence world, is Maduro going to be stuck with an unpopular foreign policy?
The foreign policy, both or especially these relations with what we in the United States would call rogue states or pariah states, this foreign policy is very unpopular across this entire electorate, but not that unpopular within the hardcore Chavista. So you're right that the foreign policy is unpopular, but not in the group that matters at this point. At this point, what matters is to make sure that the Chavistas are happy with the choice. So So this aspect of Maduro is not going to be upsetting to Chavistas. The opposition and the folks who are not Chavistas will say, will focus on something else. We'll focus on another aspect of Maduro, and that is whether Maduro has a more conciliatory approach toward the opposition. They're going to be like, we can discount the foreign policy. We know that he needed to have this type of radical foreign policy because that is his job as foreign minister. We don't know how he's going to behave on the question of government-opposition relations. And the opposition at the moment is a little bit more hopeful, or they're a little bit hopeful that Maduro will be less radical and intransigent when in dealing with non-Chavistas at home.
So within the constituency of Hugo Chavez, the Bolivarian circles, as he calls them, he's obviously incredibly popular. He has been president for 14 years and just won a new six-year term very handily. So there's no doubting his popularity. But you were suggesting that across the board, his foreign policy is not particularly popular.
That is correct, that in general, the popularity of Chavez is not based on his foreign policy.
So what is the popular opinion then? For example, Chavez supported Gaddafi towards the end.
That's right.
Along revolutionary principles, but this was a multi-billionaire kleptocrat whose miserable, vicious young sons drove around in Ferraris and murdered everybody that they didn't like. I mean, where's the revolutionary credentials of Gaddafi? And the Assads are a family of kleptocrats who have brutally controlled Syria as a family plantation for over 40 years through their ruthless and secret police, the Mujahideen. So I don't understand the revolutionary credentials here of the people that Chavez supports.
When the question is cast in terms of, are these regimes that Chavez supports good for the people at home? Is it a question of, are they fighting for democracy and the little guys? The answer is, of course, for anybody who is revolutionary, is of course not. But when they cast the question in terms of fighting the West, these regimes suddenly become valuable to a particular type of leftist in Latin America for whom anti-imperialism is the ultimate goal. So what they see revolutionary about these regimes is the fact that they are fighting against pressures from outside, and especially pressures from Europe and the United States and international organizations. That is what gives them a sense of revolutionary link with these folks. It's hard for us to understand that. It's hard for me to understand that, but they view revolution as both a global as well as an internal struggle. And for the Chavistas, the hardcore Chavistas, these regimes that we would consider pariahs are defensible because they are, quote-unquote, anti-imperialist.
Again, I'm speaking with Javier Corrales, who's a professor of political science at Amherst College. She's the author of Dragon in the Tropics, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela. And his latest book is U.S.-Venezuelan Relations Since the 1990s, Coping with Mid-Level Security Threats. So if indeed Chavez has cancer, which of course he does have cancer, apparently the initial diagnosis indicated that it had spread into his pelvis, and it sounds like with the operations that he's already had, this will be his fourth operation in 18 months, the one that he's just undergoing now in Cuba. And he's also had both chemotherapy and radiation treatment, and I don't think the prognosis is particularly good. What is the succession process here? Because he's due to begin a new six-year term in office on the 10th of January, and the Constitution states that should the president leave office in the first 4 years of his terms, then an election must be held within 30 days. So assuming that Chavez is not going to live particularly long, months or so, whatever, and of course this is all speculation, but let's assume that that is the case. Will this new President-elect or the presidential nominee, successor, if you will, Nicolas Maduro. Will he have to face an election?
Yes. There is no question, and Chavez spoke about this, that the successor will have to face a presidential election. And he has said Chavez's anointment of Nicolas Maduro was he is the one who has to run for office when that election comes. The difficulty is that the Constitution says the following. If the president leaves office, abandons office, is absent from office before he becomes the official president on the 10th of January, he's now president, he's president in office, but also president-elect. So if it happens now, power is transferred to not Nicolas Maduro, who is the vice president, but to the president of the legislature, the National Assembly. If Chavez abandons power, is absent from his office after the 10th of January, then power is transferred to Nicolas Maduro. But the issue here is that Chavez has said, regardless of whether power is transferred to the National Assembly president or to the vice president, this is an interim issue. Both of them are going to have to call for an election, and the candidate of the PSUV party, regardless of the interim president, will be Maduro.
Well, it seems, though, that already the Chavistas are targeting the person who ran against and lost to Chavez, yes. Capriles. He's running for a state governor's seat. He's having a difficult race, is he not, as governor of Miranda province. And yes. It looks as though they're already looking ahead to knock him off so that he doesn't have a second shot.
You're right. When news came out that Chavez was sick, one of the decisions that they made was to split the general election between a presidential election, which took place in October, and now a regional election for governors, which is going to take place this weekend in Venezuela. In the presidential election, Chavez beat Capriles, the leader of the opposition, and what Capriles decided at that point is to say, well, I'm going to run for the state of Miranda, my home state, where I used to be governor. And you're absolutely right. The most significant energy is being channeled by the Chavistas to prevent a victory by Capriles in his home state. They're focusing on two states. One is Miranda, Capriles' home state, and the other one is the state of Zulia, a major oil-producing region, which has always been under the control of anti-Chavistas forces. So the Chavistas want those two states, and they are investing all the resources that they can, and in large amounts, incredibly large amounts of money, into those two races. So we will see. Capriles continues to be the favorite, but it's going to be a tight race, and it wouldn't be unthinkable for the Chavistas to defeat Capriles, although most polls still place Capriles ahead in his own home state of Miranda.
Well, I recall speaking to some reporters down there in Venezuela before the elections about Capriles, and he wasn't the greatest candidate. He doesn't have the people skills and the charisma that Chavez has. Has he gotten any better? I mean, has he learned something from this defeat for president?
I think that he has. I think that he started out with that reputation exactly, in fact, that profile. But over the course of a year and a half of campaigning, he became a more impressive figure, earned the respect of all sectors of the opposition, which is very diverse ideologically and strategically, very diverse in terms of how they think. So he was able to maintain unity and expand the absolute numbers of voters who side with the opposition. So as a candidate, he surpassed expectations, absolutely. A very different man from the one we knew 2 years ago. And that is why many people in the opposition continue to think of him as the natural leader of the opposition, even if he lost to Chavez in October.
But he'd be running against, assuming he gets the mantle, he'll be running against an authentic working class guy. in the form of Maduro, right? And how much is Capriles tainted with this, the old guard regime?
He's not tainted with the old regime. He's way younger. He began his political career under Chavismo. He doesn't have links with old parties. The government has tried to make that argument that he is part of the ancien regime, the oligarchy. That hasn't really worked ever. Capriles was governor, and as governor, he was immensely popular. That's how he rose to prominence. Unlike Maduro, he has traveled throughout the country. He has visited. His campaign for the presidency took him to more than 55 cities in the country, and he really beat Chavez in terms of contacting the folks. Yes, Maduro has a more revolutionary background, has a more humble background, has a working class background, but as I was saying, for the past 6 years, Maduro has been a diplomat and away from electoral politics in Venezuela, never competing for office. And so we're not sure whether Maduro has electoral appeal.
Well, Capriles
does have electoral appeal.
I see. So just in closing then, Javier Corrales, the big issue, in my understanding, in the last election was personal security and safety. Venezuela is one of the most crime-ridden countries in the world, if not in the hemisphere. And there's a lot of insecurity about crime, and that Chavez is more ideological than he is practical as far as crime's concerned. It's not an issue that he's really wanted to address. So where does that stand?
Yes, it's important to know the facts. There's no question that Venezuela is a champion in world crime. It has some of the highest homicide rates, close to 68 homicides per 100,000 inhabitants. This is a figure that is greater than you would expect even in war-torn countries. And this level of murders, this degree of criminality, is different. It's not the result of the state trying to fight it. In Mexico, for example, you see an increase in criminality because the state at one point decided to go after some of these criminal gangs. In Venezuela, that's not the case. In Venezuela, the excessive rates of criminality are the result of the state not doing much about it and creating a sense of impunity where your chances of getting in trouble by being a criminal are very small, and so this has produced this expansion of crime. Everybody now at this point is wondering how much longer the state is going to be able to tolerate what, under any other circumstance, would be an incredibly chaotic world to be in. Any Venezuelan city, you are so exposed to any type of crime, from the smallest to the most brutal. And everybody continues to be surprised that Chavez remains somewhat cavalier about this. I don't think we're going to see a major policy initiative on the part of Chavistas if they continue to stay in office on the question of crime, which unfortunately is definitely out of control in the country.
But what's just in closing, though, what's he thinking? I mean, why does he tolerate so much crime and insecurity amongst his own people? Is it because the targets of the crime are the people that he hates, the wealthy and
no,
the middle class?
It's not that. A lot of the crime is occurring among the urban poor, folks who used to vote for Chavez in great numbers. They still vote for Chavez, but not in the same numbers. So a lot of the crime is targeting the poorest neighborhoods as well as low-income neighborhoods. I think the reason is that you have to understand that Venezuela is a petrostate. That means that all the sources of revenue for the government, or the majority of revenues, come from oil. So when you have a high crime situation, that will hurt business and the private sector activities. A state that relies on taxing the private sector will have an incentive to then provide order for the private sector to operate. But in Venezuela, where 50% of the revenues come from the oil sector, you can afford as a state to have a lot of crime with declining business activity and even capital drain because you still have oil enough. So what you see is you don't have the normal mechanism through which states feel compelled to act, which is the private sector saying, we're sinking, we can't operate, there is too much disorder, we're living in a no man's land. So I think part of the answer is that oil in this case is precluding the government or exempting the government from feeling the urgency to do something about crime.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Javier Corrales.
Great. It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Javier Corrales, who is a professor of political science at Amherst College. He's the author of Dragon in the Tropics, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela. And he serves on the editorial board of Latin American Politics and Society and America's Quarterly. He's been a consultant to the United Nations Center for Global Development and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And his latest book is U.S.-Venezuelan Relations Since the 1990s, Coping with Mid-Level Security Threats. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the European Union's Nobel Prize, not for economics, but for peace.
I love Paris in the springtime.